If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey there, cultists, and welcome to the midway point of the year. Holiday season is rapidly approaching, and already you can feel the pressure to start trying to find out what you need to pick up. But hey, you work well under pressure, right? May as well spend another hour or so taking it easy. So why not settle down with us as we take a look at another cult classic? And in a strange case of, well, serendipity, I guess, we're discussing a holiday movie today. Well, kind of. But it's so much more than that. As is rapidly becoming the norm here on Cult Classics, we're looking at an underrated gem. It's the 80s teen comedy Better Off Dead. Not heard of it? Shame on you, though to be honest it's understandable. It's another of those I wasn't aware of until directed towards it by a friend, and we'll come to that later. But if you haven't seen it and don't want it spoiled, then go watch it and come back when you're one of us. And as for the rest of you, stick with us and we'll try to get across our feelings on this one as we go. And remember, we don't claim to be experts, we're just a bunch of film nerds who love our movies. Think of us just a small group of people sat around in a bar. Come join us, just watch. So yeah, typical snafu, the guest that was supposed to be on due to behind the scenes problems isn't here, but I've been rescued, as it were, by two reliable regulars. First one is the Kaiju Whisperer. You last heard him on War of the Gargantuas just a couple of months ago. It's Nigel. How you doing, fella?
I am very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I'm going to keep tripping over my tongue. Don't know where that's coming from, but I'm guessing not enough alcohol.
I'm saying nothing.
And next up, you last heard her during January's They Live episode. It's Jen. How are you doing, Jen?
Doing all right. Pet sitting.
Ah, any particular kind of animal that you should be aware of, or is
we
it
got
scary
two
one?
Dogs, two cats, and fish tank, and any one of the mammals could end up causing issues at some point. So beware of barking, possibly, and growling.
See, I'd have thought that was just going to be Nigel.
Well, you know, east of the road.
Now, again, normally we ask our guests their favourite cult movie, that sort of thing, but as they're returnees slash masochists and came back for more, there's very little point doing that this time around. So we're going to jump straight into it by looking at today's movie, which of course is Better Off Dead. It's a 1985 American black comedy written and directed by Savage Steve Holland. It stars John Cusack as high school student Lane Meyer, who becomes suicidal after his girlfriend breaks up with him shortly before Christmas. Now, the movie was shot during November and December 84 in Utah and California, with driving scenes filmed in the greater LA area. The animated sequences by Bill Kopp, a regular collaborator with Holland, were created in stop motion. It premiered on August the 23rd, 1985, to mixed to negative reviews, I think it's safe to say. Siskel and Ebert gave the movie two thumbs down on release. And against other films from that year, Weird Science, Real Genius, Summer Rental, Back to the Future, which came out just a few weeks previously, it unfortunately went as quickly as it appeared, grossing less than $10.3 million at the box office. Cusack himself, apparently, according to Holland, didn't like the film, walking out of a screening during the filming of Holland's One Crazy Summer, claiming it had made him look foolish and allegedly not wishing to sign merchandise based on the movie. It has to be stated, however, that since then he has apparently mellowed a little on the film. Now, despite the initial mixed reception, the reputation of the film has grown over the years, primarily through cable and home video, gaining a hugely passionate cult following for its unconventionally surreal and absurdist humour. It currently holds a rating of 77% based on 26 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. The website's critical consensus reads, Better Off Dead is an anarchic mix of black humour and surreal comedy anchored by John Cusack's winsome, charming performance. And Better Off Dead can currently be found on different streaming services depending on where you're located, as well as being available on physical media. Though if you're UK-based and having a hard time getting a decent copy of this, I feel your pain. So, yeah, I was heavily into teen comedies back then, but I honestly never heard of this one at the time. I'm not sure if it was a European thing. I certainly can't remember it coming to cinemas, but 85 was a big year for movies, and at our little two-screener in the north of England, it wouldn't have stood a chance of getting picked up. I think they had Back to the Future for about 4 months solid. It wasn't until some years later that a friend, and again we'll come to that, had this in his collection and wouldn't stop talking about it. The VHS, I think it was ex-rental, covers, you know, the covers were always so much bigger than retail. It had the painting of Cusack with the cotton buds up his nose, and I was convinced at the time they weren't cotton buds, but, well, magic nose goblins, as Stimpy would say. Anyway, he convinced me to sit down and watch, and despite my reservations, I really dug it. So I'm going to ask, what about you guys? For the benefit of the audience, I will admit, the friend was Nigel. And without further ado, I'm going to pass you over to Nigel. So where did you see this one, mate? How did you first experience this?
Well, this was the VHS. This was me going to local video shop, seeing the cover, ex-rental, picking it up, I guess in fairly cheap, watching it and absolutely loving it. And it was one of my go-to films when I was feeling a bit meh for years and years. And I could just watch it again and again and laugh my ass off. There's so much to like about it. There's a few things not to like about it, but there's so many bonkers things to love about this film. It was on a VHS, played it to death. I don't know where that copy's gone now. That VHS has long since disappeared, and I've managed to get the Blu-ray, fortunately. So, I still watch it fairly frequently. Every sort of several months it goes on there, and I just love every minute of it.
Nice one. What about you, Jen? You came to this for the first time this week, isn't that right?
Yep. I had never heard of it. It came out a year before I was born. And, yeah. If it wasn't for you asking, I probably would have never watched it.
See, do you know, that's the surprising thing. I mean, I guess it shouldn't be, considering my own ignorance on this one. It's that somewhat 20, 30 years later, it's still very much a hidden treasure. I mean, you've got your renowned comedies, your Weird Sciences and Breakfast Club. and you've got, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Straight Towards Your Porky's movies. But you ask most movie-going audiences about this one, and they have no idea. It is very much what you call a hidden treasure, a huge cult following. But, well, I mean, I don't think niche is the right word, but it's very much one of those that if you know, you know type of deals. But unfortunately, not many know about it. I mean, why do you think that is? And I'll throw it open to either of you.
It's just so weird. It's kind of like its own little genre, so people kind of just look over it. And if you look at the previews for it, they make it look even weirder in the previews. So, like, when I was showing the previews to my mom the night before, because I wanted to see if she wanted to watch the movie with me, it was like, yeah, no, you won't want to watch this. This looks, yeah, never mind. And then when I watched it, it was so much tamer than, like, the preview showed. I mean, it had those moments in it, but, like, they made it seem like you would be seeing it all the time. All these little creature animations and weird little pop-ups. But, no, it's just a few scenes. It's not the entire movie.
What about you, Nigel?
Well, I think the reason it doesn't get maybe discovered, I think comedies don't really kind of have a similar following to, say, sci-fi or fantasy or horror. They just don't have that kind of almost audience behind them. And I think a lot of comedies tend to date quite badly. And I think the reason this actually stands up quite well is it doesn't really try to be your typical 80s comedy. It is so surreal and kind of out there at times. There's so many weird bits that it makes it a little bit timeless. Yeah, the music and various other things are very 80s. The look of certain people are very 80s. But as a kind of comedy, this is more like, for me, National Lampoon's. It's almost got that sort of vibe to it, where it's just a little bit out there, but it's so well written. The actual little bits that you're glancing at all the time are just so cool and so funny that it really does make it timeless. But unfortunately, I think it's in that bracket where, because it is kind of a comedy, people don't really hunt out old comedies in the same way that they hunt out sci-fi movies, you know, B-movies like myself, horror movies. They just don't have the same sort of following. So I think it's just one of those that it's always worth a look at this. It's definitely worth a try.
Well, I think there's also a societal issue of a teenager trying to commit suicide. And that is usually, like, in media now, it's buried as much as possible because we don't want kids to even think about it. We don't want it even to be on the radar. So you don't really see that in movies in the last, like, 20 years, 30 years. This one being a little, almost 40 years old. Because they don't want it to be out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I recently had a chance to talk with one of the stars of the movie, Monique herself, the amazing Diane Franklin. And we got to talking about just what makes this one so special. So here's what she had to say. I'm going to come to arguably what I think is one of the best teen movies out there, and that is Better Off Dead. It's a huge favourite of mine. I'm going to ask, what was that production like? Did it differ from other films that you'd worked on? And what were your overriding memories from it? You know, was it fun playing Monique?
You know, absolutely. Wow, that film came out of the blue in the 80s. There were so many films that I auditioned for that were gratuitous, whether they had nudity or whether they were, you know, bad language or there was violence or, like, there was just a lot of those films out. And I think that was out there because audiences had to, they didn't have it at home. It wasn't on TV really. So you had to pay to go to see these things. So the movie theaters were a place where you could watch things you couldn't really watch on television so that kids wouldn't see it, no matter what, and have fake IDs and, you know, kind of sneak into movie theaters. And that was part of it. Better Off Dead, when I got that script, it had nothing like that in it. It was a pure comedy. It was hilarious. And it was so sweet and innocent. But it was the first time I remember getting a script that I thought, I really want to see this. Like, I want to see this movie even if I'm not in it. And that is, I don't know about John. I don't know how John saw it. But I know, like, Amanda Wiss, we all were, got together. We were all very amazed by the film. And I actually, I don't know, I also wrote a book about it. Again, it's called The Excellent Comedy of the Last American-French Exchange Babe of the 80s. It just came out 2023. It just came out. Again, available from my website, signed, but it does cost more. But it is that, from doing research on the film also, I can tell you that we, first of all, we had a blast filming it. But my first experience working on it was, my first experience actually not working, but getting the script and reading it was such a pleasure. And that audition when I went in was such I wanted it so badly, but it was even beyond me. I was like, I love this film. I love the humor. And then when I saw Monique's character in the script, I was like, and I want to play her. And I wasn't originally even seen for her. I think I was seen for Beth. Oh. Or maybe another character, I don't know. But Savage Steve Holland wound up casting me as Monique, and it made me so happy. I screamed. I was so happy. I have to say, it was a breakout role for me because it was a great role model, and I loved the film. And I mean, as an actor, you do a lot of things. Sometimes you like what you do.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sometimes you're not as crazy. Sometimes you just try to, you know, trust the director and the project. I always make sure that no matter what I do, I always bring my best, because that's what it's about. You have to bring the script to the highest level it can be as your character. But Better Off Dead, I am, merci for saying this. It's very nice for me. I love this character.
That's fantastic.
Okay, so thank you for that, Diane. I appreciated her taking the time out of her schedule to talk with us. And if you want to see the full interview where we talk not just about Better Off Dead, but her work in other movies, then come back for our special, July the 16th, where we'll be broadcasting the interview in its entirety. It's a double bonus for me, as it's also my birthday. So if anyone out there wants to give me one of those Masters of the Universe Eternia sets, it'll be gratefully received. So, yeah, one of the points that Miss Franklin brought up was that, unlike some of the other movies at the time, it didn't require lewdness to gain laughs. It was a straight-up comedy that pretty much touched upon experiences we all kind of go through for laughs. Well, most of us, I would imagine. What do you think of that? Because I reckon she's pretty spot on with that. Unlike some of the other movies at the time, especially, I'm thinking, you know, things like Porky's. Even for what was considered a dark comedy, it's pretty tame compared to some of its peers, and didn't feel the need to rely on, I'm guessing, shock value or extremes to get the laughs. So, what do you guys reckon on that?
I agree, and I appreciate that, because it gets kind of annoying watching things sometimes, especially like 80s and 90s, where they're basically making fun of teenagers if they were still virgins and things like that. And it's just like, you know, that's just stupid. Why are you doing that? And nowadays we realize it's not that big of a deal kind of thing. So it just gets annoying watching those kind of movies. And I'm glad that this didn't have that in it.
Do you think it Conversely, do you think that may have hindered its popularity?
That's entirely possible, considering how much of a thing it was then.
Yeah. What about you, Nigel?
I think the thing that really hindered its popularity, and it is nice to have a film that there's no real swearing in this, there's no real sex in this. It's just a goofy film from the 80s. But I think the thing that hindered it is just simply the year in films it comes out. You look at the list of films in 85, it's unbelievable that how many films came out that would appeal to that sort of audience, that those sort of people of that age would want to see. Yeah. It's absolutely bonkers. Do you want me to read a few of the films that I found?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Okay, so 1985, we had Back to the Future, Rambo 2, Rocky 4, Cocoon, Jewel of the Nile, Goonies, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Clue, Legend, Commando, Witness, Silverado, Brazil, Mad Max 3, Return to Austin, Elmo's Fire, Return of the Living Dead, Teen Wolf, King Solomon's Mine, Silver Bullet, Enemy Mine, Death Wish 3, Flesh and Blood, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Brewster's Millions, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Day of the Dead, Fletch, National Lampoon's European Vacation, Reanimator, House, Red Sonja, Last Dragon, Fright Night, View to a Kill, Pale Rider, Life Force, and that isn't even scratching the surface.
There's so much more.
I know.
But that's just an unbelievable list of quality.
Particularly of this sort of, these kind of classic B-movie that everyone kind of reminisces about. That list is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I am glad that, you know, obviously you've got your big ones like your Back to the Futures, but for the smaller ones, I mean, some of them, if they make it, if they find that audience, they do take on a life of their own. In an interview with Fast Company, the director, Holland, he says, he puts the popularity obviously down to cable and to video stores, and he says those video stores just completely saved Better Off Dead. It was always out at any Blockbuster video I walked into, and then I talked to the guys who worked there, and they were like, you know, people rent it, and they just don't bring it back. it was that popular, and I think it ended up saving this film.
Yeah, I think that can probably be said for a lot of films in the 80s, isn't it, where they came out, didn't do what they expected, and just video stores was just, it was a whole new world. It was almost a whole new medium, wasn't it? And it was for kids like for me and us all listening to this, it was just like walking into a candy store, and every single week they got all this new candy you hadn't seen before. New tiles with amazing posters. And you're just like, oh my God, I can't wait to rent some of this stuff. And you would find then things like Better Off Dead, which you hadn't really heard of previously. And suddenly that was it. It's in your head.
You know, that's one of the things that I hate about these digital machines you can rent DVDs from. Now it's just like, you used to be able to talk to somebody and be like, oh, you like this? You'll like this. Or something like that. The movies be like side by side, and now it's like they're listed by alphabetical order or by release date, and it's like,
yeah. There's also that element of when you go in, you do find the odd treasure. I mean, it's a 50-50. Sometimes you end up with Better Off Dead. Sometimes, and you'll remember this, Nigel, something like Treasure of the Four Crowns. What I didn't realize is that, compared to a lot of the movies that we did, about 99% of the movies that we cover, this is actually more true to life than most of them. It's based on a true story. Steve Holland, he wrote the script based on his own high school girlfriend, who did indeed leave him for the captain of the ski team. The attempted suicide scenes also had an element of the real to them. He's saying, I went into the garage and I put an extension cord on a pipe and I'm on a garbage can. And I'm thinking, should I do this? Maybe this isn't a good idea. Anyway, it was a plastic garbage can and my weight just made it collapse. And I fell, the pipe broke, and it starts pouring water everywhere. And I'm basically in a garbage can drowning. And my mum comes in and starts yelling at me for breaking the pipe, which is, you know, as he says, it's what any mum would do. He says, so he started writing down stupid ways to kill yourself that would fail after that. And he put them in a sort of diary. And that diary kind of became the movie. And, you know, he added other things. I mean, he really did have a paperboy named Johnny Gasparini who would harass him for $2. For his mother, he says, my mother would get McCall's magazine and she would bring these recipes and make these things and have some excuse why they didn't taste good because she forgot something or she didn't have an ingredient. And he said in an interview with Entertainment Weekly, one year for his birthday, not Christmas, she did gift him TV dinners. She was like, and I got you these really cool frozen dinners because you like the peach cobbler in this one or something. And I was like, wow, really? This is my life. So, but yeah, apparently 6 years after the movie came out, his ex got in touch with him and he says, I got a call. I don't know how she got my number. And she said, I've been in therapy because I saw your movie and I had no idea.
Aww.
Yeah. So then she started sending him cookies and things apparently.
Aww. So,
I do think it's written extremely well. So, I mean, you know, we'll get onto the writing. So,
yeah,
go for it. I mean, what do you guys think to the writing in this?
I love Monique. I love how she, like, pretends to not speak English for half the movie. And then it's like, well, if you were living with these people, you would pretend not to understand them, too. And you wouldn't want, you would want to say as little as possible. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I think he's got some immensely quotable lines in it. But, you know, I mean, we'll come to that, but it's so absurd and it's so out there. You do look at this and you just think there is no way people could be in this situation. But, you know, as we've just gone over, it's based on Holland's life. And I think it's all the funnier for it. I mean, is there anything about the
writing? It's almost like a cartoon, though, isn't it? It's almost cartoon in nature. It's there's nothing that you look at this and think, oh, my God, that's really tragic. You look at it and it's just... everything is dialed up to 11. It's absolutely nuts. So you don't take anything serious. You just can't help but laugh at how over the top everyone is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you get lines like, you know, gee, Ricky, I'm real sorry your mum blew up.
Yeah. So it is unbelievably quotable once you've seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The getting his testicles all over me. And it's like, tentacles? You mean tentacles?
Yeah. And I think one of the best characters for that is Charles DeMar.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, with that, oh, come on, it's Christmas Eve. I could be home right now drinking this monster eggnog my brother makes with lighter fluid.
It's just, there's literally hundreds of lines in this that you hear it and you're like, that is such a well-written line, and there isn't any real swearing. It's just nuts. It's almost Mighty Boosh like nowadays. Yeah. The stuff that's in there, and I think that is one of the things that, just like I say, helps it be a little bit timeless. The fact that it doesn't, it's very 80s, but the actual dialogue isn't so much stuck in the 80s. It's just a bit Boosh like and just feels, I don't know, it just works.
There is an element of the surreal to it that I do like. I mean, I'm not just going on with the animated sequences, but, you know, the part where he's in the back of the bin after Charles accidentally knocks him in. In the trash truck after Charles knocks him in, and there's those two guys working. He says, "Now that's a real shame. Folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that."
It's brilliant. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
So yeah, it brings us on to the acting, and we'll talk about the elephant in the room, which is kind of John Cusack. So according to Holland, Cusack said again during this alleged screening, it was the worst thing he'd ever seen. He said to Holland, "I will never trust you as a director ever again. Do not speak to me." Holland claimed that Cusack felt he'd been made to look foolish and that his comments made me not care about movies anymore. I will balance it out with this, however. In a 2013 Reddit, Ask Me Anything, Cusack was asked if he hated filming Better Off Dead and responded, "No, I just thought it could have been better, but I think that about almost all my films. I've got nothing against it, and I'm glad people love it. And in 2014, Curtis Armstrong told Nerdist that he heard Cusack had signed a Better Off Dead poster and replied, that was huge, because he literally would not sign anything, Armstrong said. Someone would hand him something and he'd push it away. It was like a cross in front of a vampire.
Oh.
So, yeah, from what I've seen in the Better Off Dead fan group, I mean, hello guys, Cusack will indeed sign merchandise from it, and he is showing signs of discussing it in public, which is something people accused him of not doing before. So it's possible it's one of those events that got spun into a rumour and continue to run despite circumstances changing, but, you know, obviously don't quote me on that. But I think he's really good in this.
Like, how old was he when he did it? Because that can totally affect the way that you see yourself and you see the things that you do. And as you get older, you get a better perspective.
He was 19.
He was 19. Oh, yeah. Like too cool for school age or whatever, maybe.
Yeah. Still. But honestly, I don't think there's a point that he looks completely foolish in this. I don't think that he's made to look stupid. I think it's just, you know, a typical character in one of these kind of comedies. And I don't think he comes across as any worse than, I would say, anybody in, you know, things like Weird Science or Breakfast Club.
Yeah. I don't think he's too great in this. I have to be honest. I think he's, out of all the characters, every time he tries to be funny, it doesn't really work for me. When he's being very deadpan and dry, I really like him in it, but I don't think he's particularly great in it. I think some of the other sort of actors are sort of far better. What's the dad? Is it David Ogden? Is the dad? Is it
David Ogden Steers? Yeah,
he's. I think he's fantastic in it. The guy that plays Ricky, some of these little quirky things that he does, he's fantastic. I think he's probably the weaker. One of the weaker elements of the film, in a way.
I think he's kind of more of the a very basic character, not extremely in depth. They try to give him depth with his obsessions, but it's like there's not really much to that character. Like, everybody else seems to have something else that goes on that making them interesting. At least, you know, Ricky's got his mom kind of making him all weird. But, you know, Lane is just kind of, he's just kind of an average there. If they had, like, gone more into, oh, hey, he does art and stuff, instead of just...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Making that like a 2-second footnote, you know?
Yeah.
Don't you think he's a strange choice for this film in a way, as a leading guy? To me, he doesn't kind of fit naturally in it. And again, I might be on my own in saying that, but he doesn't come across as... If I was to pick somebody out, it wouldn't be my, oh, yeah, he really works this role.
It sounds like that year or the years that they were doing the filming, a lot of the actors were really busy.
The ironic thing is Holland had to fight for him in the first place. He saw him in The Sure Thing. I don't know if either of you guys have seen
that. Come out the same year, didn't it?
Yeah, it was on the suggestion of that movie's producer, Henry Winkler. And he wanted him to play Lane from that point, but the studio were convinced that Cusack was not leading man material. So, you know, Holland had to bat for Cusack, I mean, who eventually got the role, and then just didn't like the film anyway.
I think it does. I think around that time he'd done lots of like coming of age dramas, hadn't he? And he was slightly more serious in tone than this. And I can imagine him fitting in those, but just like I say, I don't know. It doesn't really work for me in this as much as some of the others. I don't think he's terrible, but I don't think he's, yeah, I don't think he's the highlight of the film.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. I mean, another indicator that he's kind of got over his little spat with it is in a scene from 2010's Hot Tub Time Machine. There's a kid in the background can be heard yelling, "I want my $2 at Cusack," and you know, apparently he didn't have a fit on set, so I'm guessing things are moving in the right direction. So yeah, David Ogden Stiers, I think, is really good in this as the father. Mm. And I think Kim Darby as well as his mother. And I have no idea that when I first saw this that, you know, it was the girl from True Grit.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both great. They're so good. When he fixes the windows and it's a Christmas miracle. A little day.
Yeah.
And the aardvark, that jacket that she bought him. And then the next door neighbor had it, the aardvark coat.
Yeah, I love things like that. It's so understated, they don't dwell on it. But it just happens.
Right.
You see the absurdity, and then it just moves on to something else. It's like that. It's like
this is normal everyday stuff for us.
Yeah, it's like the scene
it's
with
constant
where,
as well.
Yeah, where he's spraying deodorant.
Oh my gosh!
It's like he's got a goddamn fire extinguisher. But you know, I've been there. I've been in that situation, and you do keep your finger on the trigger of that can.
Oh my gosh. I can't imagine all the horrible things that you've breathed in.
Yeah. So we'll come to Diane Franklin. Now, I think she's brilliant in this as Monique. I mean, Amanda Weiss is great, don't get me wrong, but she's just kind of there, and then she's a plot point from that point on. You hardly really, you know, have anything from her. Whereas regards to Diane Franklin, I think she kind of steals the film in, you know, in a lot of ways. What do you guys reckon?
Yeah, Monique is a definitely much better character. She's really cuter, too. I mean, I don't know. I think so, anyway.
No, you're just not getting the disagreement from me.
She's just more interesting. She's got more depth to her. She wants more. She wants to do. She has more plans for her life. She wants more out of her life than just being popular or being with the most popular guy, which is, you know, she's not as shallow.
I think she's better in the latter part of the movie than she is in up to the sort of middle area of the film. But the latter part of the film, I think it's different. I think she kind of comes into her own a little bit more then.
Well, I think up until kind of a midway point where she sort of introduces herself to Lane and they start talking and things like that, for the most part, she's just kind of there just for Ricky to be Ricky. And she doesn't have much of a chance to shine.
I think once they've had the car chase where he drives the car into the pond.
Yeah.
He starts getting a little bit, I think it gets better. She becomes better after that, I guess, when she's more to do.
She's able to show who she is more, open up more.
Exactly, yeah. Speaking of the car scene, what is your impression to the Korean brothers?
Gosh.
They're just brilliant. I need that in my life. I need to drive to work and have people pull up next to me and start doing Howard Cosell sort of impersonations and challenging me. That would be a brilliant way to start a day. I'd love that. I would be putting on the marigold straight away and I would be like getting the goggles and I'd be going for it big style.
Maybe that's a boy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Well, I just think they're brilliant throughout it, and they do it so well. Isn't that guy, the guy out, is it Karate Kid 3? It's the villain out of Karate Kid 3, I think.
Yuji Okamoto, apparently he studied every Wide World of Sports video in order to get the voice down. He said, I went into the Better Off Dead audition ready to go, knowing that this character learned English by watching, you know, Howard Cosell. I decided to do my own Howard Cosell with an Asian accent. The producers and director thought it was funny and I got cast. And then just before the film came out, one of the producers called me to tell me that they brought in Rich Little to dub my voice.
Aww.
So,
oh, wow.
He says it was a little disappointing, but hey, it's their film. But
yeah,
I think when they're on, the brothers, they just steal the scene.
They're absolutely fantastic. It just works.
So let's get to who I think is the best one in this, Curtis Armstrong. He got the job off the back of Risky Business 2 years earlier. Holland watched that movie and thought, if I could get a cool dude like that in my movie, this movie's gonna work. And I think to his credit, it does. What do you guys reckon to Charles?
He makes a great cartoon sidekick, doesn't he?
He does.
He's the true idiot sort of in the film that's just mad as a badger, but delivers everything so well.
Well, you say he's been in high school for 7 years, so he knows how it works.
I love that. I've been in high school for 7 years. I'm no dummy. Yeah, he's got some of the best lines in that. You know, he snorts nasal spray. No air can scorch them.
Mm. He snorts everything.
This mountain is pure snow. Yellow
snow.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just like, you know, even little touches, like at the start where Roy Starling comes up and says, you'd make a fine little helper, what's your name? And he goes, Charles DeMar.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. But it's that little writing, and like the thing that really stands about this is the film is absolutely packed with lines and little things like that that they don't dwell on. So if you're watching the film and you're really kind of watching it, you kind of see so much more and it's so much sticks. And again, it's so quotable. There's so many things to reminisce about and talk about as you're watching it or once you've finished the film. It's just so good for that.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got actors in parts that you wouldn't expect to see them, like E.G. Daly, who obviously does a lot of voiceover work, but I'm sure you'll know, at least you, Nigel, from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Of course.
Yeah. Vincent Schiavelli, who's this absolutely phenomenal character actor, whereas if they're, you know, whenever they wanted someone that's kind of out of the ordinary, you know, in Tim Burton, I think he was even in the Bond film, Tomorrow Never Dies, he's got this wide range, but he always plays kind of, I guess you could say, the society's freak role. Whereas in this, he's the exact opposite. He's the teacher that everyone seems to just love.
Yeah. And that teacher scene, well, the memo is he's asking about who wants to come up to the front to present the homework. It's just like,
so unreal.
Yeah, everybody's getting, you know, filing cabinet kind of level things out. And he's just there with a piece of paper with chewing gum stuck up saying, do homework.
Which is more realistic.
Yes. Yeah. I've been in that position.
I work with those students.
Yes. I was one. Well, no, I wasn't one of the SWATI students. So, yeah, we're getting on to, I'll bring us up to Aaron Dozier, the ski captain. You got any thoughts on him?
It's great, isn't he? What an annoying shit. What a great guy. He plays it so well. He's awful.
Yeah, apparently, and this is according to them, he says, when I came in for the audition, I didn't know who Savage Steve Holland was. He says, I looked at one guy and said, who's this chubby kid? It turned out he was the director. And Holland, you know, remembers that. He says, he's interrupting him as he watched the dailies. He says, all of a sudden, this pompous jerk comes in and says, hey, who's the fat surfer? And I'm like, who is this? And they go, this is the guy coming in for Roy Starling. And he's like, you're perfect. You've got the part. So yeah,
he's awful in it, but in a great way.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, it was his only film role.
Really? Yeah.
In 2004, he went on to become, weirdly enough, head coach of the Boston College ski team.
No, he was good in this. I thought he was really good as an awfully obnoxious git. He's great at it.
And there's no shortage of kind of what you would say antagonists in this, whether it's him, his group, the basketball team. Or I don't know if you noticed, they just were eating baby food in the canteen.
I missed that.
Weirdly enough, Beth, when she, also around that time, the person standing behind Beth wears the sweater from Freddy Krueger. And Weiss played Krueger's first victim in Elm Street a year before.
Things you
This was
find
pretty.
out.
I know. And Ricky. What are your thoughts on Ricky? I don't know, you've got some thoughts on this, Jen.
He's a legend. He should have his own film.
He's a boy.
It's brilliant. He's a quintessential perfect human in my eyes.
Oh dear God, if that's the case, then I guess I better give up on dating now.
I think he's really good at that role. There's
No,
so
he
many
did.
little things that he does that when the camera's not on him, there's loads of little scenes where there's one part where Monique shakes up the can of Coke and obviously he's kicking off with her and it's all kicking off. Just watch Ricky, just lean forward, look at a plate and steal one of the cakes. It's just, he does so many little things like this on camera. I think the guy's great. I love him. I want him in his own film.
I'm not sure how that's going to happen because apparently his real life is a little problematic, and I'm going to leave it at that. But with regards to Ricky, I do think he plays the role really well. I think it's just prior to that little section that you're on about Nigel, where he wants to sit down, and there isn't a chair, so he just picks the thing up off the kid's tray and just throws it. Yeah. So with regards to the acting, I mean, is there anybody in there that you don't think that we've mentioned that could do with a mention?
Ricky's mum is fantastic. That she's
Kim.
great as the obnoxious mum.
Laura Waterbury. She's sadly no longer with us, but she really does play annoying extremely well.
She does. She just laughs and smokes away through the film. She's fantastic.
And leads to, what in my opinion is one of the best scenes with when she starts drinking the paint thinner, thinking it's a liqueur.
Oh, it's just it's wonderful. And
Have
can we
you
have a small shout out for Lane's neighbors? We don't
Yes.
see anything, I don't think, in the film. They just stand there dressed as aardvarks or whatever else they've got on, just looking silently.
Yeah. Speaking of people that don't really say anything, what about Lane's little brother?
Badger.
That kid
Badger's
is
brilliant.
crazy. Like it's like, wait, what? He makes a he makes himself a laser gun, and it's like an actual laser gun. And he's like, wait.
He's great, isn't he? Just barely says a word. He's reading his book on how to pick up trashy women, making a space shuttle laser gun, and he wears his leopard skin print pajamas. That is genius.
I do love that it's just kind of constant. And that's the good thing about this. They're just little throwaway jokes that if it was another film, you'd expect them to really kind of dwell on.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
and have Lane, you know, have a scene where Lane sits him down and says, what are you doing? And but they don't. He just gets on with it, and he goes on to the next scene. And then that coup de grace at the end of the shuttle taking off from, you know, going through the roof. I just think I love this film so much.
Yeah. he looks at Lane constantly like he's just an idiot. Why have I got a brother like this? He's just so good.
Exactly. And we can't forget Damien Slade as the paper boy, obviously.
Oh my gosh. The paper where all the boys come up, the scene where they all come out of like the trees, and it's like, oh my goodness.
Isn't that a lovely shot as well? All kind of silhouetted.
Yeah, with the mist. Guide.
Yeah, looks really cool. There's quite a few bits that are filmed in a really nice kind of eye-catching way.
Yeah. And considering it was Steve Holland's directorial debut, I think he did an absolute cracking job.
Oh, yeah.
Cracking job on this. I mean, he got it apparently through a short film. It was called My 11-Year-Old Birthday Party, and it was played at an LA film festival. That's where Henry Winkler saw it, and he took a liking to Holland. He says, Henry took me to lunch, and he said that my movie was so funny. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, it wasn't supposed to be funny. It's a sad story about my life. So Winkler asked him if he had any more sad stories about his life, and I'm like, of course I do. So then Winkler set Holland up at his Paramount office so Holland could write the script. He says, everybody talks about Winkler being the nicest guy in Hollywood, and he actually is. I met him last year. I can also attest to that. But he says he went on to say, he didn't pay me or anything, but he said, I believe in you. I believe in your twisted vision, and I want to give you an office. When the movie came out and he wasn't a success, Holland said he was put in film jail. Said he was grateful for the chances that he had. There were chances they wouldn't believe. But there's a point where I'm like, okay, I'd like to try and make a movie again. And everybody's like, I don't think so, mister. Stop right there. But I do think I think he does himself a disservice. I think it's a really good debut when it comes to direction. I mean, you know, Nigel's already brought up the silhouettes in the park when Johnny's chasing him. But I think there's some really good setups in this.
Where he looks through the window, and the kind of the pattern on the window matches kind of the shape of his face. Just little things like this. There's several of them throughout the film that, again, doesn't seem to dwell on them. They're just there, but they're just nice touches that stick in your head.
Yeah, I mean, it is those small touches that I think is what keep people coming back. At the end of the credits, you know, the film's over, you can go now. That kind of thing. And I do like, and I know you said, Jen, this were kind of like a big thing in the previews and you were expecting to see more. I do like the animation, the Bill Kopp animation for like Lane's Little Flights of Fancy. You know, particularly the one in Pig Burgers, which apparently is still there, but the restaurant's gone out of business. But Aww. It just have the, it still has the burger signage.
Okay, I loved that whole Frankenstein thing. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I like the little one, the section in the canteen as well, where he ends up talking to his own sketches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
it just shows how much his psyche is breaking.
Yes. So I mean, with regard to that, with the production design, is there anything that you particularly want to draw attention to? Anything you think was particularly memorable? Anything that you think could have been a little better? I mean, I'll be completely honest with you, the version I ended up watching, because Amazon, even though it's on Prime, didn't want to show it in my country, and the Blu-ray was just unreal to get hold of. So the copy I ended up watching was a really old, cruddy copy. So I can't say, you know, quality-wise, what it looks like. But is anything that you said you've got the Blu-ray, Nigel? What's the quality on that? And, you know, how's the production design hold up?
I don't really notice the production design almost when I watch this. It's those little touches that are great, but certainly on the Blu-ray, the picture's okay. It's it's not the best quality picture I've ever seen, but it's a lot better than the VHS. That's for sure. There are little things that you see, little things like where he's got the breakfast cereal boxes. There's little things you notice on there that I couldn't see when I was watching the VHS. It's the production design is, I mean, it's one of those films. It's an 80s teen film. So there's nothing that for me that really stood out about it.
What about the sound going on from the production, the sound design, the soundtrack? Soundtrack was by Rupert Hine, but it's got some pretty good songs. One that always gets me singing along, it's probably my age, is the Howard Jones when they're repairing the Camaro.
Oh, yeah.
Loved that scene. And E.G. Daly as the singer, and I thought she was pretty damn good as that singer.
That was really good. Was it New Year's Dance or whatever it was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I actually really enjoyed that part. It's like, it's a good song. It's a good scene. And I love how the bully comes up and makes a joke and Charles just starts laughing his head off and just totally throwing them off balance.
That's exactly what
you're supposed to do with bullies. Yeah. It's just...
That makes me crease up because Curtis Armstrong's laughter seems just so genuine. Mm-hmm. You can't help but laugh along yourself.
Really infectious, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, it's got that other great scene for Ricky, where Ricky comes in and starts busting all these moves and then just ends up face down on the floor.
It's very 80s, isn't it? That's one thing that does date the film,
The
kind of soundtrack. You can immediately tell, wow, this is really 80s. It's all right. I'm not a mad fan on the sort of thing. You saw the Better Off Dead track. Not a huge fan of that. Howard Jones' track is a great classic 80s piece of music for me. But overall, I think the soundtrack and the songs are a little bit forgettable. It's not. It's certainly not why I watch the film, that's for sure.
Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, yeah, it has got some great names in this one. But still, outside of its hardcore fans, it's not that well known. But I am thankful that it hasn't received the remake treatment. I don't think it would... I don't think it'd come across that well. And I don't think... Simply because that unless it's somebody like Holland that's doing it, I think you'd lose that kind of vision.
Yeah.
I just don't think they'd choose to make this film nowadays, would they? It'd be so...
I don't know. They've made some stuff like... I mean, you've got Scott Pilgrim, where that's like he's doing half the movie in video game scenes. And I think that it would probably still be... I mean, if you update it with, like, you know, the use of cell phones and all that jazz, I don't think that there would be much change to it.
I think it would lose that sincerity. I love Holland's direction on this, and I think it does great for his debut. But I think there's a vibe running all the way through this kind of seam of... It sounds like an insult, but it's not. But it's got like an amateurish kind of vibe to it. And I think that helps the production. Because I think you watch it and it's not this glossy Hollywood kind of product.
It's of its time, isn't it? It feels like an 80s film. And I think there's so many things that... I don't know, nowadays, I can't remember the last time I saw a film like this. Maybe some of the Kevin Smith movies, while they're not this, they are almost similar in nature, where it's almost that amateurish way about it, and it's done kind of from the heart. And I don't really see these sort of fun, lowbrow films that are actually smarter than you realise once you get to watch them. I haven't seen one of those now for ages. And they're so kind of prescribed, the films that are coming out nowadays. I think this sense of humour would be lost. It would try to be too politically correct, which is the death of most movies. It's now you have to make it from the heart if you're going to do it. And I think that's what this director did.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that one, mate. I mean, considering it is the 80s, considering it does that amateurish vibe, and you've already mentioned that it's, you know, it instantly dates itself as an 80s film. Do you reckon, hand on heart, Nigel, that it does still hold up?
I guess that depends who wants to watch it. I mean, are you, if the person that's watching it is very politically correct, they might not get the same love of this film. No way. I think a lot of the humour, a lot of situations, I like it because I get thrown back to when I was a kid. And there's a lot of retroness about it that I go, oh, yeah, big hair, big music. I get it. Whereas I think a lot of people watching it nowadays would probably go, what the hell am I watching? What is this? Like, there's a guy on a mountain snorting snow. What? I don't know. And unless you're in that kind of place and you're that sort of person, I don't know if it would stand up for everyone. But I think there are people that would watch it and think, wow, this is ace. Certainly maybe one for... Is it one to watch with mates and beers? Is it that sort of film? Is it standing up in that area? I don't think it stands up as a romantic comedy, shall we say. So I don't know how it's going to appeal on that front. But there are certainly people out there that I'm sure would watch this and think, that was great.
Well, when I watched it with my significant other, and she'd never seen it. And about, 30, 40 minutes through, she turned to me, she just says, this is just weird. I'm just not getting this. But I will say that by the end, she was fully on board. When it got to the bit of the Errol Flynn scene with Ricky and Lane and the ski poles, she was just loving it. And I was just really glad to see that somebody that's not, that's not been exposed to it before. Get into it.
Go ahead.
No, go on, go on.
Like I was saying, I work with kids. These things, all the stuff that they're going through, and it's so totally still relevant. The emotions and how they react to things, like his huge reaction to his girlfriend breaking up with him. That's the way teenagers react to things, because when something is the worst thing in the world that has ever happened to them, it is the worst thing that has ever happened to them up until that point. So they are going to have huge reactions. And just even that weird kid, everybody knows that weird kid that just will randomly eat leaves off the plants at school or snort snow just to see what happens.
Yeah.
So it's it's still... you could still be able to apply it. It still holds up in a lot of ways because those behaviors never change. You always have that creepy kid that is just all over some girl who is just what are you doing? You still have the boy that's obsessed with his girlfriend. You still have the bullies that take every chance they get to make fun of you. You still have the cool kids. And, the one sport that's cooler than the others. And, all of that is still relevant. And you can still have people be able to relate to that. Even those moments where you have the kid that draws the cartoons and kind of talks to himself through them or whatever. It's still, it's still there.
Yeah. Because, at that age, when they are in a breakup, it is kind of the end of the world. And it's just oh, God, my life's never going to be the same. Just as much as you do, as you say, you get the kid that's obsessed with his girlfriend. I'm not obsessed, cut to opening a wardrobe and having a bunch of coat hangers with a face.
I don't think I've ever seen that in real life.
Well, it's probably a good job, isn't it? Or you'd start running.
Oh, there's quite a few different things to make me start running.
Oh, God, it's turning into a therapy session. Now always, as always, if only due to time constraints, there'll always be elements of what we're discussing that you guys out there may think we've glossed over or intentionally ignored. I assure you that's not the case, but as with all our movies, there's only so much we can cover. Now, if you want to discuss anything that you think we've missed, then please let us know on the Silver Screen social media, as we're always listening to whatever you have to say. But honestly, if you're just looking to chat with fellow fans about this one, you honestly can't do any better than the Better Off Dead Facebook group page. And I'll put that in the description as well as our social media. So before we move on, I'm going to ask you guys, is there anything you here think warrants a mention that we may have missed? Some, schoolboy error for overlooking?
They should have had more of him playing the sax.
Does that do it for you?
I like music, period.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. What about you, Nigel? Anything you think we might have missed?
I don't think so. I think it's just one of those films that, in a way, nothing really happens unless you're really watching it for the things that's happening around what's nothing happening. So it's just full of little things in the background throughout the whole film that are just little gems constantly, and it never seems to stop. So many lines.
As you say, there's nothing. It is kind of a film about nothing almost, but it does it in such a beautiful and charming and funny way that it's more of a, I don't know, it's more a vibe than it is a strict A to B plot. And I think if it's your kind of thing, if it latches onto you, you're going to be stuck with this one for life. Because even now, when I go back and I watch it, I was worried it was not going to hold up, but within, you know, 10-20 minutes, I'm laughing as much as I did the first time that I saw it. It's just so crazy, and I love it. But it's kind of an understated crazy. It doesn't come all out bells and whistles saying, look how crazy we are. It's just treated, as you say, deadpan. They don't dwell on it. They move on. And it gives it time to breathe. And, you know, sometimes you're looking at people with you thinking, is that supposed to be fun? Am I supposed to be laughing? But you find yourself laughing anyway because it's just, you know, your own personal experience. And I love that about this one. So, yeah, all covered. So what we'll do, we'll take a look at what the audience thinks with Vianne in just a minute or two. But before we do, I've got to ask you guys, who was your standout in this? I mean, it's got some decent performances, some great characters, but if you had to choose, I think I know where Nigel's going with this, who would you choose as your wingman?
Monique.
See, I'm going to surprise you. I would actually say the dad.
What? Really? Oh, I was expecting Ricky.
No, I think overall, I think in terms of my favourite, every time the dad is on just delivering these lines, I'm absolutely falling about. I love him. I think he's just fantastic.
Nice one. And why for you, Monique, Jen?
Because I could relate to her more than the other characters. And I can actually speak a little French.
Oh, fair enough.
But no, she's actually seems like the most intelligent of the characters.
That's a low bar.
This is true. Yeah, that is an extremely low bar.
Who wouldn't mind having a friend that can just read a manual and fix the car?
Yes, that's true. I'm going to have to say Curtis Armstrong as Charles DeMar. Dude cracks me up every single time. He is, I would say, disturbingly familiar to more than one person I've known in my lifetime. But more than that, I mean, he's just the kind of guy I'd want to hang out with. I mean, though, to be fair, I'm going to cheat on this one, and I'm also going to include Monique for pretty much the same reasons. I think both of those characters are people you would want in your corner.
Which is why they are the best friends.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, I'm also going to ask, what's the thing that gets you in this one? Something that you recognise that just makes this film for you, whether it be a particular scene, the soundtrack, line of dialogue, anything? And I'll ask you first, Nigel.
I don't really relate to anyone in the film, I don't think. I don't kind of watch it like that. I just watch it for weird moments. The thing that gets me every single time, and I actually sit waiting for them to appear, are the Koreans slowly pulling up at the side of the car. That's my go-to part of the film, I think. I love it.
Nice. What about you, Jen? Is there anything that you just recognise and you just think, I love that part?
The Frankenstein scene. That's probably my favourite. The Pig Burger?
Yeah.
I loved it. Oh. I just found that so ridiculous and amusing.
Fine. It's on a similar vibe. I've got to go with just the sheer absurdism of this entire thing. I mean, knowing that, and yet now still knowing it's more true to life than pretty much everything else we cover on Silver Screen. Recognising that Holland took some, I don't know, let's say not the best moments from his life and turned it around to make something that not only helped him, but helped thousands. And I'm saying, you know, at least thousands of us along the way. I mean, we've all been there to one extent or another. And I think, you know, I'm going to disagree with you, Nigel. I think we recognise ourselves in some of these characters, and I think you help feel a connection there. I reckon that's why this has stood the test time better than a lot of films from this period. And then there's the line, "Gee, Ricky, I'm really sorry your mum blew up." Yeah. So, yeah, that's what brought us to the table. We better get out of here before Mum puts something in front of us to eat. But what about you? Once again, we asked on social media what you guys thought of this one, and we received a really great response. So I'm going to hand this over to the lady Vianne once more to tell us what you think. And Vianne, what do people out there in the virtual world think of this one? Have you seen this one yourself?
Yeah, thanks, DK. I think I saw this probably back in the actual 80s, early 90s. My older sister had a big girly crush on John Cusack. So I don't have enough of a fresh memory myself to really speak on it, but people definitely have some opinions. Joseph Froming said, "That's a wild movie." Rick Cowling hasn't seen it, but does enjoy the film poster by Drew Sturzen. Athena Williams, "This one I wasn't a huge fan of. I'd say 3 out of 5. 2 out of 5 if not for John Cusack having such presence as an actor. I love black comedies. Heather's is a fond memory of mine. And I got into Peter Sellers, Stanley Kubrick films during my black comedy phase, but I just couldn't get into this one." David T. Mortison, "I would say it is a 10, 2 times better than the rest of your 1 to 5 rating, so I guess they feel pretty strongly." Anthony Alicia, "It was a 5 at one time, but it has become a 50 over the years." So again, really strong feelings. Tyler Archibald, "Out of 5 stars, 10. These reviews are there making me think I need to go back and give this another look. Stephanie Goodwin, 5 for me, the gift that keeps on giving. Popped with Daniel, Ben, and Tanya say, "We have a podcast where we rate by pops. I give Petter Off Dead 5 pops. Even with its flaws, it's perfect." Yeah, lots of really strong feelings on this one. Caleb William Stone actually had quite a bit to say here. "Better Off Dead was important to me because it made me laugh during a time in my life when I was in great pain. Although admittedly, this wasn't hard to do. I frequently found Beavis and Butthead hilarious too. Like Lane, I was suffering the effects of my first real heartbreak. But my biggest takeaway from this movie just might be the realization, many years later, that pain can be revisited in very productive ways, especially if you want to be a writer or some other form of entertainer. From its opening credits, BOD is grounded in absurdity, and this tone never feels excessive, falls flat, or loses steam. I can't think of any jokes that feel forced or superfluous, even such bizarre tangents as the Van Halen hamburger scene." Now I'm thinking maybe I haven't seen this because I feel like that would stick out. Okay, so plenty of people say John Hughes was the master of movies about teenagers, and in many ways he was, although some of his movies have not aged well. Savage Steve Holland, however, seemed to have no pretense, no goal of rising above anything in particular, and the movie is all the better for it. Having a perfect cast definitely helps. Ryan Boris, 3 back then, now 4 because of John Cusack. So again, there's a lot of feedback. People are really enjoying Cusack's screen presence and performance. And so, yeah, I'm thinking that this is one I'm going to have to go back and either rewatch or at least re-experience, or maybe experience for the first time. So with that, back to you, DK.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Vianne. We'll see you next time. And once again, thank you to you out there for letting us know your thoughts. I know I've mentioned it a couple of times this episode, but I really want to thank everyone over at the Better Off Dead Facebook group for joining in this time. It was great to read through your replies, and we really hope you guys will stick around for upcoming episodes. Now, if we didn't read out your response, or you're a little late to the party and still want your say, you're more than welcome. You know, just hit us up on social media. We're always open to discussing the episodes we cover. In the meantime, though, It's time to head into the final minutes of this thing with our thoughts and ultimate score for today's movie. So I'm not going to beat around the bush with this. I'm coming straight over to you, Jen. What is your thoughts and your score for Better Off Dead?
7.5, 8
Out of 5?
It's something I would
Holy
watch.
Holy shit, you
oh,
did
out of 5? Oh, whoops, I thought wow. it was out of 10. Sorry. Out of 5, like a 3, 4, 4.
4? Okay.
Yeah. It's something I would definitely recommend to some people, and I wouldn't mind watching again. So it's definitely on the higher end of the list of movies.
Nice one. Well, I'm pleased at that. What about you, Nigel? What's your final thoughts on this one and your score?
4 out of 5. Go-to film. One that I watch probably most years. And, yeah, it's one of those you've got to try. I've already headed to the Better Off Dead Facebook page, and I've kind of signed up for that. I can't wait to see what people have got on there, to be honest.
Nice one. I will say, I'm giving another shout out, that one of the moderators on that is actually Diane Franklin.
Wow.
Yeah. She's pretty involved with the fan base. So, yeah, it's a good group to be part of. So, yeah, for mine, before I was exposed to this movie, I wasn't interested. Honestly, that cover made me hesitate for the longest time. After I was exposed to this movie, I thought it was just fantastic. I couldn't get enough. That being said, I hadn't watched it in quite a while, so I was kind of reluctant to do so this time, thinking I may be looking at this with rose-tinted spectacles. But it's just every bit as good as I remember. It's aged, yes, you know, haven't we all, since the 80s, but it's no less entertaining. The performances are top stuff. Sorry, John, but yeah, I even like yours. The atmosphere is anarchic, the dialogue's sharp, immensely quotable. The odd scene doesn't quite do it for me, but they're few, and I mean very few and far between. Holland nails it, with actors that are the very embodiment of the characters they're portraying. The casting is just oomph. Yeah, every time I watch this, I can't help but laugh at Charles, I can't help falling for Monique, and the entire thing has this just chaotic, surreal quality that sets it apart from other movies of that era. Honestly, folks, if you haven't seen this one, do yourself a favour and watch it as soon as possible. I mean, your mileage may vary, but if you can't identify with Lane's plight, and if you don't come away from this with that smile on your face, I'm sorry, but you've got no soul. And I'm gonna give it 4.5 out of 5 because I freaking love it. Which, by my reckoning, gives between us Better Off Dead a cult classic score of 4.1 out of 5. So, yeah, I don't think that's bad at all. I mean, I risk repeating myself all too often, but I think these movies have a hold on us, and they prove to be much more resilient than those that maybe at the time are more critically well received. I think it's a definite one of those. What about you guys?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, it's one of those.
Yep.
Brilliant. Just goes to show that, yeah, critics may get paid for their opinion, but they're not the final arbiters of taste. Art's subjective, and nowhere is this more visible than with a classic like this. So, yeah, on that bombshell, that about clinches it for this episode. I'd just like to thank my guests for metaphorically skiing the K-12 with me on this one. So, you know, thank you, Jen. Thank you for, you know, coming to save the day. Is there anywhere that you want people to find you on social media or anything you want to promote while you're here?
Nope.
Nice one. Makes it easier for me. What about you, Nigel?
No, nothing. I don't want anyone stalking me on social media. That seems weird.
Actually, I'll go ahead and give this. These red lips. These dot red dot lips. That's on YouTube and Instagram. That's me singing.
See, now I'm intrigued. I'm gonna go and look for that myself.
It's not much, but hopefully by the time this airs, I'll have more.
So, yeah. Again, thanks. Thank you guys for coming to the rescue on this one. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I believe next time, Jen, we'll be seeing you for Tron. Is that right?
Yeah.
Nice one. And I think You, Nigel? Yeah, we mentioned it last time. This was like a kind of stopgap, but you'll be joining us for Godzilla, is that right?
I certainly believe so.
Nice one. Yeah, we'll put that link for you, Jen, in the description. And if you're listening to this and feeling adventurous, want to see Jen belt out some tunes, then give it a click. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. If you've had a good time, please consider leaving us a like, hitting that subscribe button if you want to come with us to look at more cult classics in the near future. We sure would appreciate having you with us. And as always, purely optional, tips onto our Ko-Fi are always gratefully received. You know our slogan, we don't do this because it's easy, but because we thought it would be easy. Now, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, well, here's a special month, with another episode. This time we'll be taking a look at the Anthony Hickox comedy horror madhouse that is Waxwork, and that promises to be a trip, so I hope you can tag along as we step over the rope for that one. In the meantime, if you're not quite ready to leave Better Off Dead in the rearview mirror, then you're in luck, as next we've got the full interview with actress, model, author and all-round legend Diane Franklin. I'll be speaking to her not only about today's movie, but other classics like Terrorvision, Amityville 2 and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, as well as a writing career. So please, if you're a fan of today's movie or Diane, then join us. Again, the link is in the description so you can be notified when it goes live. And I have to say, though, I've interviewed a few people for the show now, and Diane is by far one of the nicest people I've had the pleasure of speaking with. It really is a good one, so please tune in for that. Until then, thank you for being with us. Have a great week, and remember, you are the hottest thing since sunburn.
You have been listening to the Cult Classics Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast, created, written, and hosted by TK. Produced by Mike Wilson. Editing by Nick. Feedback section produced by Lady VN. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Silver Screen Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.